What up, what up, what up? This is the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, coming to you from my real live medical office in Dedham. Joining me as always, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine from the HedgeBetter Studios in Braintree, Mass. Justin, what is going on tonight? You ready to talk some football, my man?
Ready to talk some football. Got a little break from the heat. Feeling good. Short week. Everyone's got 4th of July coming up. So yeah, great time to get together and talk a little football. Yeah.
In an entirely Karen Reed trial-free zone here at the Doctor at Ultimate Football Patriots Podcast. No discussion whatsoever. This is your oasis to come and talk only football.
I was going to say, we might be the only two people not talking Karen Reed today. So there's your right, break. Yeah. Right.
Well, the only thing you and I will agree on that is that it's impossible. You will never get 12 people to agree on anything related to that, probably.
I agree completely. Yeah, it's a mess, but you know what? We're here to talk football.
That's right.
Leave that to the experts, right?
That's right. Okay. Let's get right into it. We got a lot to cover. We haven't recorded in a few weeks. It's getting close to training camp. I believe Patriots rookies are reporting in just a couple weeks.
Yep.
So it's getting to that time of year where we can really start to look at and not only take a look back at the offseason that just passed and kind of summarize it, which we're going to do today, but then also preview a little bit about the upcoming season. We'll be doing this every week this summer. We're going to go division by division. We're going to preview every division. We're going to go through the position groups for the Patriots every time we record, pick a couple and talk about them. We're going to start today with just an open take on sort of the general state of the offseason, where things have been. And I want to start with this opening take, and I think you're going to disagree with this, but I'm going to say this because the more that I see how things have like come together here with this offseason, the kind of team they have, the schedule they have, what I have heard from Gerard Mayo and the reception he got at the Brady night, which we talked about the last time we recorded, I'm going to say this right now. This is going to be a rough year for Gerard Mayo. I'm not saying it is fair. I'm not saying it's right. You have to give this guy a chance to implement his program and do things his way. I think it will be super unfair to judge him after one season. But that is exactly, I think, what Patriots fans are going to do. And we have seen, Justin, in recent NFL memory, several coaches flame out and get fired in 1 year or less. And I'm not saying that will happen with Mayo. I'm not saying that should happen with Mayo. It would be completely unfair. But I'm saying that when you have a fan base that is so used to winning for almost two decades, and you're bringing in a rookie, inexperienced coach that seems to have a penchant for spilling his tea to the media and sort of running and saying things he shouldn't say, I think it sort of all adds up to a situation where by the end of this year, people are going to be calling for Gerard Mayo's job, whether it's right or wrong.
Well, you know, I don't hate that take. I look, in my mind, here's where I think the big differentiator will come in, right? Is I agree with you. I think the Patriots are probably in for a rough season. I mean, you know, you look at the talents, you know, you got a rookie quarterback, you got a rookie head coach. They lack some big playmakers in that offensive side of the ball. They're also in a tough division. They got a tough schedule, right? Like there's all sorts of reasons why it should be a tough year for them. The thing that I'm really looking for, and I know we've mentioned this before, but you have a defensive specialist head coach, right? Who's touted is a very good defensive mind, right? Like we heard Gronk and Edelman come out the other day in their podcast saying Gerard Mayo was like the Tom Brady of the defense, right? And to back that up, you have a Patriots defense that last year without its two best players was arguably a top five defense by the end of the year, right? So I think to me, the big thing that will set off panic in alarm bells is how this Patriots defense looks. I don't expect this offense and Drake May, you know, with this roster to be the 2000 Rams or you know Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. But what I do expect is that this is going to be a team that is going to be gritty. I expect that they're going to defensively be able to hold teams you know, to low points, low scoring. And I expect to see Gerard Mayo's defensive acumen on display. I think they'll struggle and lose games because I think they'll have a tough time on offense keeping up with some of these teams. But if we see this team that has a defensive head coach and this team that has arguably a top five defense personnel wise, just absolutely flounder all year, to me, that would be the biggest cause for concern. Not so much the games they win.
The most encouraging thing I've heard maybe about the whole Mayo thing this offseason is the thing you just said. I think you told me it a week or two ago and you just mentioned it right now, which is, you know, that broad comment that he was the Brady of the defense.
Right.
To me, that is like the most reassuring thing I've heard about him. But I just feel like, you know, I don't know. I feel, you know, we talked a lot the last few years about how Mac Jones didn't really get set up to succeed. And if you really look at it, you know, maybe Mac Jones lacked the talent, but there was also a lot against him, not just on the field, but off the field. And then, Oh, by the way, replacing Tom Brady, which is like a dead on, you know, setup for failure. I mean, who can fill those shoes?
Yep.
And I just wonder if we're doing a little bit of the same thing with Gerard Mayo here. Like, you know, it's going to be, he's trying to fill huge, huge, huge shoes. And they're not that good of a team, I think. I mean, they might be better than I'm giving them credit for. Fine. Like you said, the defense might be good, but they're certainly not a contending team. He's not taking over the keys to the Rolls Royce. We can agree on that.
Right.
They don't have a quarterback that's established. They got a rookie, in fact, at quarterback. Brissett is a bridge quarterback. There's still some pretty big holes on this roster, and you've got Belichick's shadow just looming so large over everything that's going to happen this year. You know, I feel like even right now, if you pulled the Patriots fandom, a huge chunk of people would say they made a mistake by firing Belichick last year. And I'm wondering what that would look like, say, when they're 2-7, or if they're 3-11, you know what I mean? Or if they're 5-10, like it's going to lead to a tremendous amount of pressure on Gerard Mayo and this team. And it's like, it's going to be a tough situation for any coach to navigate, let alone a rookie coach.
Extremely difficult. And like you said, Gerard Mayo, he's not taken over the keys to the Rolls Royce, right? He has no offensive firepower, right? I mean, for lack of better terms, like who was that big playmaker on that offense, right? You have a rookie quarterback. So they're going to struggle to score points, you know, and it's going to be tough. And like we said, we think they're going to have hopefully a decent defense, but that defense isn't going to be able to win you enough games that you can be a viable contender. I think it's going to be really tough. The thing is I would really hope that Patriots fans are able to kind of look at all the underlying circumstances and say, hey, you know, this isn't going to be our year, but there are things that we should be looking for to tell us whether, you know, we made the right decision or not. But to your point, if you're sitting there 2-7, it doesn't really matter how good your defense plays or how good Gerard Mayo looks. If you're there 2-7, people are going to have questions.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not going to be fair to Gerard Mayo if things don't go well and he gets a ton of pressure on him and people start, you know, second guessing the Belichick decision and he has a ton, it's just not going to be fair to him. But
right.
But it is what could happen if things don't go. Now, if they come out and they exceed expectations, I will like happily eat these words because I'm not saying that this is what I think should happen. I'm just saying this is what I think will happen when the team gets off to a very slow start this year. And, you know, Justin, you just brought up an important point, which is like, you know, their defense was really good last year and they were 4-13. I mean, this is, even right. though defense is kind of making a little bit of a renaissance league wide, it is still a league where you have to score points to win. Mm-hmm. And this team is built to win games. Like it was like 1987, you know, and if it was like 1987, this might be like a 9-7 or 10-6, or it might be a team that could even do better than that with a defense like they have. But in 2024, if you have the kind of offense they have, it is going to be really hard to keep up.
It's going to be really hard to keep up. I mean, you know, you look at a lot of these rookie quarterbacks. I mean, just strictly speaking from an offensive standpoint, like, you know, you look at some of them, like Caleb Williams, he gets to go to Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, right? Like Jaden Daniels gets Terry McLaurin. Like who does Drake May get, right? He's got five or six guys that we don't know right now who's the number one and who's the number five in that locker room, right? So it's extra difficult when you have a rookie quarterback and he doesn't have an established go-to playmaker in the offense to rely on.
Yeah. And all the things that really were issues for Mac Jones more or less are still going to be issues for Drake May right now. Yeah. If you really think.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, right? I mean, we don't know how good that offensive line is going to be. We doesn't have a bunch of playmakers. Like, it's tough situation. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's really no easier for Drake May. The one thing is, I hope, and I think, you know, obviously neither of us know, but I would venture to say that based off of our initial impressions of Drake May, the two of us at least have higher hopes of his mental toughness and his intangibles than Mac Jones. But that's about the only thing that I could say right now that's different, you know?
No question about it. I definitely think he has better strengths in that category. But you know what, Justin? It's easy to say that now. What happens if they start off 0-10? Like Bledsoe's rookie year, I think they start off 1-11. You know, so if they get a start like that and May doesn't look good and people start to throw around bust or something, you know, if he's playing, which we don't know if he will be, but, you know, how's he going to handle that? A lot of the deficiencies, a lot of the things you want to make it like a nice soft landing for your rookie quarterback to kind of integrate into the league, this franchise simply doesn't have right now.
No, and don't forget, like I think we forget sometimes too, like Mac Jones's rookie year, they were 9-7 and they were a playoff team. So 10-6. They were 10-6 and they were a playoff team. 10-7, that's what it was. Yes, yeah. 10-7 and they were a playoff team. So like it takes some time. And I don't think Mac's rookie year, either of us were really questioning his intangibles, right? Like I think we thought we were in a pretty good spot in terms of finding our next franchise quarterback after that. So I mean, not only can things change in the blink of an eye, but sometimes it takes forever to actually assess the situation accurately.
So you look at everything they've done this offseason, where they are with quarterback, where they are with the coach, other moves they made, which we're going to talk a little bit about. What grade do you give this offseason right now? And as a Patriots fan or follower, how satisfied are you with how they approach this offseason?
I mean, I think as far as the offseason goes, there's a lot to take into it in totality. I mean, I'd give them like a C+, maybe like a C+, B-, because I think they did a couple things that I liked, right? They obviously went out and they said, hey, you know, we're going to go draft our guy. We got a guy. We want to take him at 3. They turned down some decent trade offers and they went out and they got Drake May, right? And I think we both like the fact that they had conviction and they went with their guy. I also like the fact that they re-signed a bunch of their veteran talent, right? Got moves that, you know, we acknowledged if Belichick was still the coach, we probably wouldn't have seen, right? Like it was very clear that there was a regime change this offseason when we saw them handing out all these contracts to these players that they had drafted and brought in. And I think that was encouraging because I think that was something that we both, you know, got a little annoyed with Belichick sometimes, really quick to ship out these homegrown players. So I like the fact that they did that, but we said it from the beginning, they didn't bring any stars, didn't make any game changing moves. And so therefore it's very tough to see them taking a big next step.
Yeah. I mean, I would go ahead and I would probably be able to see him. I'd probably give him a B- or B. I think that I'm grading on a curve because I just think they had so many holes to fill based on the failure draft the last 4 years. I would have liked them to have made, we talked about this extensively, like a real big splash kind of hallmark move in free agency. And they didn't really do that. They kind of had a very Belichickian free agent class. They filled some holes. They brought in some players that I think will fit their system, which I kind of like, but I just wanted that one move that filled one of their big holes. They didn't do it. I love that they retained for their free agents. I love that they did that because I'm tired of watching these guys walk off and have success elsewhere. Belichick was a master for 20 years at knowing who to keep and who to let go. And then all of a sudden in the last 4 or 5 years, he just like completely lost his magic on that front. So I'm glad they keep the young talent. I think that in this situation, where they are, they need to retain the players they've developed as much for on the field too, as for in the locker room. because they need these guys to be bought in. I love they kept the defense intact. I absolutely love that they drafted Drake May and brought in a quarterback of the future. I think that was essential. I also love that they took a flyer on Joe Milton, a guy that has a super high upside. Seventh, sixth, fifth round quarterbacks have been successful in this league before.
Yep.
Has a lot of talent. I love that move. I love they drafted two quarterbacks because I think you cannot buy enough lottery tickets for that because it's so important. So I love all that.
Yeah. No, I do too. I think to your point, there were too many holes for them to fix all their problems in one offseason. So part of the criticism is, you could say, slightly unfair because they were never going to address everything, right? The stuff we're saying that they didn't do. But I do like what they did. Wish that, to your point, wish they had done a little bit more with maybe one or two more big free agents. But, you know, like we said, this is going to be a multi-year rebuild.
And let me tell you now what I hated about this offseason. You can tell me if you agree or disagree with me. First of all, okay, I still hate that they jumped right into Mayo with no process. And I really wish they had looked longer at Mike Vrabel. I think bringing in an experienced coach would have been invaluable to this franchise, given all the transition they've had the last few years, rookie quarterback, everything else we've talked about ad nauseum. I hate that they jumped into Mayo.
I think we both were kind of surprised that Vrabel didn't even get a real look. I think it was almost like a foregone conclusion it was going to be Mayo.
How about Brian Flores too? Like, don't you know, that's another guy. You want a guy that has experience as a coach and was available and knew the system and knew New England. They didn't even look at Brian Flores.
I agree. I mean, I agree. Look, I wonder if when it comes to, well, you know, I mean, I'm almost going to answer my own question because what I was going to point out about Brian Flores and Mike Vrabel is the fact that neither of them seem to really have a successful history in developing quarterbacks. I mean, obviously Brian Flores, defensive guy, Vrabel, you know, he stuck with Tannehill for too long. And then, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Will Levis, but I'm answering my own point. I'm contradicting myself because what experience does Jerod Mayo have? You know,
he has none.
So I think it's just, I think it's difficult to try to say, you know, for one reason or another, why some of those guys weren't considered. But you know what, when we saw that press conference, it seemed like Robert Kraft's conviction was there. It seemed like he didn't need to explore. He knew he was going to go with Jerod Mayo too.
He definitely had that conviction. We talked about this at the time, and I don't know how great I feel about that, even though I think Kraft is a terrific owner. I don't know. I would have liked more of a process. I would have liked more of a process, and I think they would have benefited from that, and maybe their decision-making might have been influenced if they had a real process. Let me tell you something else I hate about this offseason, okay? I hate that they still have gaping holes at left tackle and wide receiver number one. I think they have depth at the wide receiver position, but they still don't have a wide receiver one. It's been 5 years, right? They've had like a number one tackle and a number one receiver. We have been doing this podcast. I think this is our fourth season. We've had the same damn conversation like 50 times.
Yep.
They go into the season still with gaping holes at tackle and wide receiver.
Yeah. And, you know, we just talked about like, what's the bigger concern for this team? The offense or defense? It's the offense. What do you got a rookie quarterback. Offense has been your issue for a while now. Like, it stinks that there's really no way to put it. It stinks that that's not something that they went out and made it a priority to address. Now, I hope that is the second act of their multi-year rebuild. I hope either at some point via trade or whatever, going into next season, they address both of those things. But it's tough knowing that your rookie quarterback is potentially going to be at risk. It's tough knowing that, you know, he doesn't have a go-to guy to get established with. I mean, there's a good chance that, you know, you look at that whole Patriots wide receiver room, there's a good chance that whoever Drake May builds or winds up trying to build a rapport with isn't on the roster in 2-3 years.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they're counting on one of these young guys to develop. I mean, I think that's what they're hoping for. But those are long odds. Those are long odds. You know, I would prefer it if they had someone that was a little more established. All right, I'm going to tell you one more thing I hate about this offseason. It's sort of a little thing, but I think it kind of a little sneaky could be a factor this year, and it's going to segue into the next topic, which is we're going to talk about the Ramondre Stevenson contract. I hate that they are still thin at running back. I know they signed Antonio Gibson. He's got some miles on him. Stevenson has a little bit of an injury history himself. They paid him big money. Young, effective running backs are being plucked from middle rounds of the draft every year. It would be great if they had one or two of those guys where you could say that you felt like if Stevenson got hurt, that you knew who was going to be able to take the load, especially given the lack of talent at wide receiver. They're going to need to run the ball. I'm worried that they're thin at running back still, and I think they're putting a lot of eggs into the Ramondre Stevenson basket.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I mean, look, Ramondre Stevenson, I like him, but, you know, four-year, $8.5 million a year deal. I mean, that's just – you're asking for a lot out of the guy, you know? So and we don't really know if he can handle that. I mean, look, unless they are really confident that between Antonio Gibson and some of these other lower depth chart guys that they can fill a significant role, I don't really know what the plan was, because Ramondre has always been used pretty much as a committee, right? Like as his first 2 years, he was in a committee. Right, exactly. It was him and Damian Harris as like a 1-2 punch, and he was the two in that 1-2 punch to start with.
Right.
So, right. You know, now you like you said, you bring in Antonio Gibson, but there's nothing that shows me that Ramondre can handle a bell cow workload all season and not only remain healthy but remain efficient.
Not only is there nothing that shows you that, I mean, you tell me, isn't the trend across the league to get away from that? I mean, you look at like the fantasy draft, and that's something we might talk about at some point. Like those bellwether running backs that used to draft in the top three, there's not many of them anymore. Right. The league is moving away from the concept of that, like that workhorse running back.
They are. I mean, a lot of teams are, because I think not like teams are seeing that, like, the production and the stamina isn't there with these workloads and these usage rates. And not only that, but we've said this for years, like how many teams since I can remember have gone on and won Super Bowls, you know, with their running back being the driving force, right? Like you said, there's a lot of guys that you can pluck from middle rounds, free agency to fill a role or fill a void in suffice in terms of, you know, for a winning roster. I mean, it's not something that I think teams are prioritizing right now.
So what did you think, Justin, about the Ramondre Stevenson contract? Because I've been very, again, pleased that they've been signing their own free agents. This one was the one where I probably had the most mixed feelings about, just because he's a running back. That's it. Like the player, I think Patriots fans overrate Ramondre Stevenson. I think he's a good running back. Patriots fans talk about Ramondre Stevenson like he's freaking Walter Payton, and he's not. He's like a top 10, 12 running back if he can stay healthy, which he really hasn't been able to do. They put a lot of money into a guy that I think, I don't know, he's good, but is he that good? He gets hurt all the time. I'm not sure that was a great contract.
I'm not sure it was a great contract either. I mean, I think it was honestly one of those situations where they had the money to spend, and yeah. You know, he's a guy that's been here for a few years, and I don't know. There was really nobody behind him in the depth chart that was ready to come up and take the reins from him. I think it was really just a situation out of convenience and I just cap space.
Yeah, maybe honestly. I mean, that's a fair point. I mean, maybe you just do it because you have cap space that you're going to be able to use.
Right.
So why not take your own? I don't know. But I just think, like, why not start drafting? I mean, they took Pierre Strong and Kevin Harris a few years ago, and neither one of those guys worked out. I think they're both gone. They didn't draft running back last year. I don't think they drafted a running back this year. Like, I prefer it if they were just drafting guys in the middle rounds and plugging them in, which is what they did with Stevenson, by the way.
Right.
Then making a commitment to a running back.
Yeah. I would much rather, honestly, them get a couple guys in the mid rounds on rookie deals that they can rotate in there and platoon in there. Unless they're saying that, hey, due to the fact that we don't have star power at wide receiver due to the fact that we have a rookie quarterback. We are going to be a ground and pound run heavy team this year. And to do that, we want to lock up a guy that we feel comfortable giving the majority of the workload to. I don't know. I mean, that's all I can think of, really.
You know, and the Antonio Gibson thing makes me nervous because I like him as a player. And I said that when they signed him, but I also feel like he does have some miles on him. And, you know, those kind of pass catching running backs, I feel like they're available in the middle rounds of the draft every year too. If Ramondre Stevenson gets hurt, like Antonio Gibson, I feel like the Patriots have a litany of players like him that they've signed as veterans, and then they never even make the team, yeah, or they get hurt and like they barely see the field. I mean, you could probably make a list in the last 5 or 6 years of quite a few receivers and running backs that they've kind of done this on. So I just feel a little nervous, right, about the whole running back position right now.
Yeah, and I, you know, mark my words, there's going to be a couple of games this year where Antonio Gibson has a very costly fumble or turnover. The guy's had butter hands, you know, during his career. I mean, the last thing that this offense needs, you know, is to finally be stringing something together and have a careless turnover, right? Like that's the type of stuff that makes, you know, decent teams mediocre and mediocre teams bad and bad teams worse, you know?
Yeah, no, that's actually totally well said. And I didn't even think of that, but it's spot on. He's a player that has had a long history of fumbling the ball. And Belichick, that's one thing he would never tolerate. Guys that fumbled the ball didn't see the field. So it's like, you know, proof it's a new regime.
Yeah.
One of their agent signings is a guy that is a playmaker, but fumbles the ball a lot.
Exactly.
Okay. The other thing, I just kind of piggybacking off the Stevenson contract, is the Devin Godchild comments about looking for his contract now. And I think one of the problems with the approach of signing all your own players is once you do that, you get a line of guys that are standing there saying, I'm next. And if you don't take care of them, a lot of them are going to become disenfranchised. And I think Devin Godchild is the first instance we see that, where they took care of 8, 9 other guys this offseason, and Godchild is left standing there saying, hey, what about me? I feel like I deserve more. I feel like I'm one of the best linemen in the league. To me, Justin, and I don't know how you feel about this, I'm willing to live with that as sort of like, you know, the downside of what I think is the right approach. I will take 1 or 2 guys getting disenfranchised if it means they're retaining 8, 9, 10 of their own guys, because I'm tired of them drafting when they do hit on these guys, developing them, and then letting them watch away. I feel like it's sort of like a problem you just have to learn to live with, which is the fact that you take care of your own guys, there's always going to be someone left on the outside looking in that might be a little mad, but it beats the alternative of just letting guys walk constantly, which is what Belichick seemed to do.
Well, 100%. Like, you know, you just kind of mentioned it, right? Like it's something you have to live with. What's the alternative? The alternative is, you know, in this situation, you got 1 or 2 guys, or, you know, figuratively speaking, you got a couple guys that maybe, you know, would like a new contract, but are a little disgruntled. In the previous situation, you had a bunch of guys wanting a new contract that are disgruntled, right? So it's like, if anything, you're kind of mitigating your risk there. You're saying, hey, we can't sign everybody, but we're going to try to sign some people. And, you know, unfortunately, there's going to be a couple of odd men out. The other thing I love about that is, you know, we talked about the fact that you don't have Brady anymore. You don't have Belichick anymore. You're not winning Super Bowls anymore. New England is not a tropical place. Massachusetts is not a destination spot for these athletes. Like, you got to give people a reason to want to come and play here, right? So I love the fact that they're showing that they're willing to pay guys now and retain guys now, because if you weren't doing that, on top of everything I just named, if guys said, I'm not going to go to New England to be a rental, I'm not going to go to New England to be a one and done, like, I want a contract, like, that, at least now they can expect maybe there's a decent chance that they'll get that payday.
They're playing by different rules now. They have to take care of it. Belichick could get away with what he got away with because of what they were, because they have Brady, and because of what they were just winning all the time. Right. And that was a huge draw. I mean, you really can't get away with that approach. Even if you wanted to,
yeah,
you can't that anymore, given the fact that they've now gone from like the top of the league to the bottom of the league. Yep. You have to pay them. They're not going to come. All right. Last point. It ties in a little bit to what you just said, actually. Very quick Patriots take. Then we're going to move on to the rest of the league. There's no chance Brandon Ayuk comes here. Welcome to life as a pawn in the game of chess of NFL negotiations, right? Brandon Ayuk is using the Patriots and other franchises to get a better deal for himself in San Francisco. I would be stunned if Ayuk ends up in Foxborough. There's just no reason why I think he would come here unless, you know, they were willing to pay him a ton. And even then, I'm not sure he would want to be here.
No, I mean, I agree. The only thing I could see is him potentially, you know, saying that, viewing himself as the clear number one option in New England, right? Where, you know, San Francisco, he's got to compete with Debo. He's got to compete with McCaffrey. He's got to compete with Kittle. I mean, but, you know, obviously he comes here. He instantly steps into that number one role that commands targets and has game scripts revolving like around him. But other than that, I really can't see why he'd want to come play here. Rookie quarterback, very little chance of playing in the postseason or winning a championship. I mean, you know, where he's been for the last couple of years, he's almost been contending for a championship since he got there. It would definitely be a huge downgrade for him.
And that's the other half of this too, which is, look, say what you will about San Francisco. I know you think they're going to step down a little this year. I kind of agree with you on that. They're still somewhere in the neighborhood of a Super Bowl. And You know what? If you trade Brandon Ayuk, if you're the 49ers, you're taking a huge step down from your chances of being a title contender. I feel like what you're seeing with the Ayuk thing is a leveraging process by both sides. And I think they're going to figure it out and he stays in San Francisco. I would take him in a second. Don't get me wrong. I would trade a second round pick for him. I might trade multiple mid round draft picks. I would not trade next year's first for him because you're going to be trading probably a top five pick. And there's no way I would trade that for Brandon Ayuk. But a second, a third, maybe a third, you know, a couple mid rounders, I would consider it. I don't think it ever happens.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's going to happen either. I think Ayuk's going to stay put in San Francisco. And if the 49ers are smart, they'll find a way to bring him back.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk a little bit about around the league. We're going to go through some stuff that's happening in other places besides Foxborough. And I want to talk with one of our favorite players in the NFL, and that's Trevor Lawrence, a guy that you and I have called an abject fraud from the time he was drafted, before he ever played a game. One of the first episodes of this podcast we ever recorded, we called him out and said he was overrated. He has done nothing but prove us right since he entered the league. He is now the highest played player in the National Football League. I find this move intriguing because the performance has not been there, it hasn't been anywhere near there. Trevor Lawrence is a player that has a worse career quarterback rating than Mac Jones, and I believe the worst career record than Mac Jones. Yep. And he is the highest played player in the league. I'm not saying he's not a better quarterback than Mac Jones. I know he's a better quarterback than Mac Jones. But what I'm saying is he isn't that much better a quarterback than Mac Jones. You can only make so many excuses for this guy before at some point you have to look at the production on the field and say it comes down to the player. The Jaguars, I think, were in position where they should have looked long and hard at letting him walk, bringing in someone else, the next guy, rather than making this kind of commitment to him. They didn't have the guts to do it. Instead, they pay him unlike any other player has been paid before in the history of the league. He's the highest played player in the league. I think it's a huge mistake.
It's a monumental mistake. One thing that I think is actually kind of funny is that, you know, I had listened to a couple people make an argument for why you would get a deal done with Trevor Lawrence now as opposed to wait till the end of the year, right? And the basis of that argument was, well, if you sign him now, you can probably get him on a little bit of a discount, because if he goes out this year and he takes that next step and hits free agency, you're going to have to pay through the roof for him. So I find it hysterical that they paid him now and they still made him the highest paid quarterback in the history of the NFL. There goes your discount for locking him up early. The other thing to me is I think it's super dangerous. I think it's a slippery slope because, you know, with all these quarterbacks in the last couple of years that were just completely resetting the market, these record-breaking contracts, at least the majority of them were the top, with the upper echelon of quarterbacks in the NFL, the Mahomeses, the Burrows, right? Those guys, I can justify and understand getting the contracts that they've gotten. But what you've done, to your point, is you've effectively taken a guy who statistically is one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and you've made him the highest paid player. And so now what you've said is, well, we're not, throughout the league, it's not that the best quarterbacks are breaking the bank. It's just that starting quarterbacks are breaking the bank. And I think that's going to lead to a lot of bad contracts and bad decisions for franchises down the road.
Well, it already has, Justin. It already has, because you bring up Burrow and Mahomes and them getting paid, and that's true. But, you know, Daniel Jones got paid.
Yeah.
Prescott's gotten paid a lot. You know, he might get paid again. A lot of these guys that really haven't even done it on the field have gotten paid.
Yes.
And it's like, it comes down to who's next, right? To steal our cousin's catchphrase, our cousin that sells cars, Shimon, right? Who's next? And the person that's next puts the franchise in a very difficult position of deciding whether they completely walk away and go back to square one, or whether they pay a guy that might not be worthy of being paid as the highest player in the league, a salary that is the highest in the league. And I'll throw out an example for you. How about Deshaun Watson is a great example, right?
Yeah.
They paid through the nose for that guy. And what has he accomplished for the Cleveland Browns? This is his fourth season in Cleveland, am I not mistaken, coming up this year. They made the playoffs last year with Joe freaking Flacco, because there's talent on that team. They have good players on that team. And you see what Deshaun Watson has done and what he's being paid. It's a tough spot for a franchise to be in when you draft a quarterback that isn't quite a franchise quarterback, but isn't also the worst quarterback and can kind of play. Nobody wants to go back to square one, right? Because we know what happens. You can draft the next Sam Darnold. You can draft the next Zach Wilson. You can draft the next, the guy from Dallas, San Francisco, Trey Lance, right? So nobody wants to do that. But I think you're better off doing that than paying the guy $250 million who is not even a top 15 quarterback, in my opinion.
I don't think he's a top 30 quarterback, if we're being honest. I think he is at the point where he is like borderline a starting quarterback in the NFL. So it is so dangerous. And, you know, you talk about a team like the Jaguars who, you know, they're going to be needing to add assets and pay people. I mean, you know, that Brian Thomas is going to want to get paid. Just got drafted, right? He's going to want to get paid a few years. Travis Etienne is going to want to get paid, right? They're going to have guys on that team that they're going to want to pay. And when all your money's locked up in a guy like Trevor Lawrence, it really hinders your team. It's one thing to lock that money up in a Brady, a Mahomes, a quarterback that can overcompensate for the fact that you might not have the
elevate.
Best. Yes, exactly.
Right.
He's going to elevate. You don't need to put the best talent around him at every position because he's going to find a way to win games and championships with a decent roster. Trevor Lawrence is not that guy. So when you pay that guy as if he was, you effectively sealed your fate. Because if you take a Trevor Lawrence in an average roster, you will never win a championship. And that can be applied to any other
Agreed.
Franchise. You take an average quarterback in an average roster, you have a 0% chance of winning a Super Bowl. So
yeah, I would call Lawrence a top 20 quarterback. I'm not as harsh to him as you are, but you're right. He's never going to elevate you.
Mm-hmm.
Or he hasn't, and he can elevate you to commensurate with what you just paid him.
Right.
So you're right. Totally locked in. I mean, look at Dak Prescott, who is, by the way, a much better quarterback than Trevor Lawrence, right? But even, you know, he's a 5th to 10th best quarterback in the league. They paid him like he was one of the best. I think he was the highest paid quarterback in the league when he got paid a few years ago. They had to not sign players. They got rid of, traded Amari Cooper. Look where that franchise is right now. They're middling. They're middling because Dak Prescott is a very good quarterback, but not a great quarterback. And when you pay a very good quarterback like a great quarterback, then you can't make up the difference unless you get really lucky in the draft. Now, with what Jacksonville just did, the difference is even bigger because you have paid a below average to average quarterback like he is the best quarterback in the league. How do you make up the delta on that? You got to hit on like five or six lucky picks in the draft. It's not going to happen.
Right. No, it's not. It's not. They what Jacksonville effectively did was seal their fate for the duration of the Trevor Lawrence contract. Yeah. That'll be a team that'll be lucky to make the playoffs. They will never compete for a Super Bowl, and they will be mediocre, possibly worse.
Yeah, and to me, it's like, you know, you say seal their fate, and like when you're signing like a Dak Prescott or a Kirk Cousins to something like that, and you're sealing your fate, okay, you're going to be a 10-6 team. You're never going to win a Super Bowl, but you're at least going to have a good season, win games, you know, make the playoffs, contend for your division. What are you sealing your fate as with Trevor Lawrence? Like, you know, 7-9, 8-8, you know, what, where's his performance? When is he throwing 37 touchdown passes like Dak Prescott has, or, you know, Kirk Cousins did a few years in Minnesota? He never has. So what are you really sealing your fate as a sub mediocre team? I think it was a terrible mistake. They should have just walked away from this guy and moved on.
I agree completely. Obviously, you know what? For us, easier said than done. I still got friends that I respect their football opinion that are telling me that the verdict's not out on Trevor Lawrence yet, or, oh, this guy's got potential. Oh, trust me, he's talented. And I look at them like they got three heads. So, you know what? Maybe we're just on the, you know, one end of the spectrum that really, really doesn't see his value. And maybe there's some people that are, but I don't know. I think it's just a crazy move. And I think they're going to regret it big time.
I mean, I still think, you know, I'm not going to totally close the book on Lawrence, but what I will say is 3 years of data, that's a lot of data. And it's hard to keep making excuses. And I'd say that after this year, if it doesn't happen, you can pretty much call it that he's out of excuses. And, and if you can't get it done on your rookie contract, when you get that small cap number, and you presumably can be surrounded by a ton of talent, it's get that much harder to that second contract. And I think that's what's going to happen. Yep. All right, let's talk a little bit about a couple other ones we just mentioned. How about Tua Tagovailoa? You know, what's going to happen with his contract now? I think that is more justifiable than Trevor Lawrence, right? I still think there's a lot of questions there about whether you pay a guy like Tagovailoa. And then this one's really interesting. Brock Purdy. I mean, are they going to pay Brock Purdy big money? Because Brock Purdy is going to be asking for $250 million. Tua Tagovailoa is going to be asking for $250 million. Dak Prescott is going to be asking for $250 million now that Trevor Lawrence got it. All three of those guys have a better claim to that kind of money than Trevor Lawrence. But at the same time, I think you could say the same thing about them, which is I don't know if they're going to be the big difference makers that the Mahomes and the Josh Allens will be. I think it's going to be interesting to see now what happens with those three guys.
I do too. I mean, you know, I think we probably one or two of them will get paid. I don't know if all three of them are going to get paid. I mean, it's funny because with Dak and Tua, I don't think those guys will win you a Super Bowl. Purdy has been close twice now. And I think, you know, I think you could make an argument that Purdy, I think, probably deserves it the most, or at least there's the most left to be determined from Purdy, right? But you know what? Like, I think so. I think these organizations, I think the Dolphins, the Cowboys, I think these organizations need to kind of adopt a whole new model, which if I was the GM or the head coach of a franchise, this is what I'd be doing. I would say, hey, from now on out, we're taking rookie quarterbacks, we're giving them a couple years to prove it. And if they do not prove that they are that upper echelon, those game-changing quarterbacks that elevate a team like a Mahomes, like a Brady, it doesn't matter if we're going to go 10-7 or 9-8. Whatever. We're going to move on. We're going to move on because it's better to move on and try your luck back again in the lottery to get a game-changing quarterback than it is to commit that type of capital in solidify your mediocrity for the next 3, 4, 5 years. So I think it's crazy if all these guys get paid, but we'll see. I hope that the owners and the GMs kind of put a squash to this.
See, I'm going to disagree with you, actually. So I think I would pay Tua, Dak, and Purdy. I think I'd pay all three of them. But I would just – I think if you're those franchises and you can look at it like, I'll sign these guys And even though they're not the Mahomes, Allen, Burrow level, they're one step below. And I think they're good enough that you can justify paying them and hoping you get lucky and find a few players in the draft to help make up the difference for the players you won't be able to sign. I think that is realistic to me. These are guys that have performed. Like Tua, Dak, and Purdy have, maybe Tua less so, but Dak and Purdy certainly have performed. Trevor Lawrence has never performed.
Trevor Lawrence has never performed, but you know, I guess I just look at it and I say, like, when you look at the quarterbacks, like even not even just recent, right? Like, I mean, yes, you can talk, you can mention Mahomes, you can mention Burrow, but even if you go back like 10, 15 years ago, when you talk about like Big Ben, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, like all of those quarterbacks proved in their first couple of years that they were capable of getting you to the big dance, if not winning you the big one, right? Yep. And that right there was enough to tell me that, hey, you know, this is a guy that's worth a big contract. Like, I think now, you know, you give like, that was the indicator of you have a special quarterback that's worth keeping in the future. And I don't think that's changed. Like, yes, like I think, like you said, like those guys, they give you a chance, you know, you'll go above 500, you'll probably make the playoffs, you're going to be competitive. But like, if that's your goal as a franchise, fine, that's your goal. But if your goal is to win a championship, I think we've seen that these Super Bowl winning quarterbacks have shown at like a 70-80% clip that they can get you there under their rookie deal. Like just from what we've seen from game-changing quarterbacks. So I don't know. That's the only reason why I say that, hey, I'd rather take my chances with guys on rookie quarterbacks and pay the supporting cast and wait till I strike gold. But you know what? If you're someone who says, hey, I would rather take my odds in the other direction and say, hey, if I can get myself to the playoffs enough times, maybe we strike gold and we have that season where we break through. I mean, it's a tough decision, but I do think that more often than not, you know, by the end of a quarterback's rookie deal, whether they're potential Super Bowl winner or not.
Well, one thing I will say about this topic for you and I and a lot of people in the New England area, we're coming at this from the perspective of Patriots fans. Right. And, you know, if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, like 10-6 or 11-6 or whatever, 12-5, you know, in a division title,
I get it.
A competitive flip, that sounds really good.
Right.
We're so spoiled that we look at it and we say, look, if I'm going to have Tua, Kirk Cousins or Dak Prescott, and I'm going to have a good season every year, but I'm also going to lose in the first or second round of the playoffs every year, that's not good enough for us as Patriots fans. Or so we think. Give us like a decade of like 5-12 and 6-11, like you know, a lot of these franchises have had, and that might sound pretty good.
Trust me, I get it. The perspective is a big part of it, and like you said, we're coming at it from the perspective of championship or bust. But yeah, I bet there's a lot of teams that would die for an 11 or 12 win season and a chance to.
There are. To make there the really playoffs, are. And we got to remember that too. Yeah. And that's why I think it's tough to walk away from that. But to me, Trevor Lawrence is a different animal than that because he's not even that. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I just think, I mean, Tua, Dak and Purdy, I think it's not even comparable. It just amazes me that Lawrence somehow ended up being the highest paid player in the league. I really think it's crazy. It's like Daniel Jones on steroids. It's worse than even we criticized Daniel Jones when it happened. This is even worse. All right, let's talk about a couple other quarterback situations around the league. I'm going to ask you, Justin, who's going to take the first snap for each of these franchises? You can tell me, okay?
All right.
Got to bring it back to Foxborough to start. Patriots, who takes the first snap? First, week one.
Week one, regular. Oh man, you know what? That's tough. I'll say Jacoby Brissett will still start week one.
I agree. I think it's Brissett. It's tough because there's a lot. The preseason here, I think, is going to be super impactful for how this goes.
Yeah.
And we'll have a lot more sense of this as we get into the training camp and maybe a preseason game or two. But right now I'm going Brissett. What about the Steelers? Who takes their first snap? Any chance it's Justin Fields?
There's a chance, but I think it's going to be Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I'll call it 100% with Russell Wilson. Yeah. Like I think Justin Fields is so overrated. People are still hung up on the first round pick thing. I'm not saying Russell Wilson is a world beater, but I think from what you've heard out of the Pittsburgh mini camps, he looks good. He looks like an upgrade. I think it's Russell Wilson there. Yep. How about the Raiders?
I think it's going to be Gardner Minshew, but I mean, what's his alternative? Aiden O'Connell. I mean,
who's the starter right now? Who was the starter through minicamp?
Was he the starter? Yeah. I mean, I think actually, you know, it's funny because when we saw Aiden O'Connell, I mean, I think we made a couple of comments last year in the podcast that this was a guy we shipped out of New England and he was actually looking half decent when he got a chance to play. But I like Gardner Minshew. I think he's more of a little bit more of a leader. I think he brings a little bit more entertainment value to your team. I mean, I don't think either of those guys are necessarily starting quarterbacks. I mean, you might have two of the best backups in the league vying for the starting position spot, realistically.
Yeah. I think the Raiders don't really have a great option either way. Like, I wouldn't be particularly jazzed about Aiden O'Connell if I was a Raiders fan.
No, not at all. But I guess with the Gardner Minshew, you just get a little bit more personality and flair, something that, you know, adds to that entertainment factor. But
yeah, I'm gonna call Minshew as the starter there right now. I think he's more proven. I mean, Gardner Minshew is a surefire ticket to an 8-9 win season, and if you're a franchise like the Raiders, you're gonna take a guy like that because I really feel like that team is on track to maybe be one of the worst teams in the league. So I'll go Minshew. This next one's interesting. Vikings, right? You got Sam Darnold and JJ McCarthy going after it. You know, Darnold's a disappointing player. He's never really proven he can do it. He's never really had a chance with a team with the kind of talent that Minnesota has. The team is still stacked. You got the best receiver in the NFL on that roster. They got a first-round pick as well from Jordan Addison from the previous year. They are the kind of team that will make a quarterback look better. Is that going to be enough for Sam Darnold to rehab his career, or will they just go right to JJ McCarthy?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think JJ McCarthy is actually the third most likely to start. I think they would start Nick Mullen in week one before JJ McCarthy.
That's acceptable.
He had success for a while. I mean, he's shown that he can be a viable quarterback. I think it's going to be Sam Darnold. And, you know, I think what a lot of people forget is, like, it seems like at this point, Sam Darnold has, like, been in the league forever, which, I mean, he kind of has, but, like, the kid's still only, like, 26 years old. Like, 20, right. You know what I mean?
Drafted at 20, wasn't he?
Yeah. He came into the league super young. And obviously, you know, you talk about bad landing spots. He came to just a dumpster fire Jets organization, right? And then he never really kind of got his chance after that. Like, I think Sam Darnold will be a decent quarterback in that offense with those weapons. And I think he starts week one.
Yeah, I like that take. I think it will be interesting to see if Sam Darnold can get it done in Minnesota, because if you're ever going to have success in the league, it's going to be with a talent like that around them. Yeah. And don't forget, the Vikings paid relatively big money for Sam Darnold for a kind of reclamation project quarterback. Yeah. I think he's paying like $10 or $11 million a year. So everyone has shit on this guy for 4 years. I have no affiliation at all with Sam Darnold. I took great glee in him failing as a Jets quarterback because we're Patriots fans. But I would be lying if I didn't say there is a part of me that will be rooting for Sam Darnold just to, like, prove people wrong. And it would kind of be like a great reclamation story. So I would love to see Sam Darnold have success in Minnesota.
I would too. Yeah. I honestly like Sam Darnold. I like Kevin O'Connell. I like the head coach. I have no reason to root against Darnold or the Vikings. So
absolutely. Yeah, be an interesting team. Okay, how about the Broncos? That's another one, right? They brought Bo Nix in as a rookie, and they don't really have a Sam Darnold on that team. They have Drew Lock, I believe. and they have
Zach Wilson.
No, not Drew Lock. They have Jarrett Stidham, and they signed someone else. Who else? Zach Wilson. That's right.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham. So they don't even have as maybe bad an option as Sam Darnold might be. They don't even have a Sam Darnold in Denver.
No, I think the Bo Nix experiment, I think you get him in there right away. I do, because yeah. I think you're in a weird situation in Denver where you still got, I think it's like another this year and next year of just ginormous dead cap space because of the Russell Wilson contract, right? They're still very, very hindered. Like So I think you figure out sooner rather than later what you got in Bo Nix and make that decision whether you got to move on from him or not. I think you throw him out there week one. And look, I don't hate Jarrett Stidham, but I am so out on Zach Wilson. Like, you can't tell me that guy is a viable backup quarterback at this point. Like, you know,
I'd like to see Stidham get a cup of tea. I'd like to see him have. But I agree with you. It probably will be Bo Nix, depending on how things go in training camp. I don't think that Denver team is a bad landing spot for a rookie quarterback. There's some talent there. You know, they have a good number one receiver, a couple other good players. They did trade Jerry Jeudy to Cleveland. I don't think it's the worst spot in the world. And as bad as that Broncos team is in position they're in right now, if they could hit on a quarterback, it would really, I think, almost balance out the Russell Wilson thing. If you'd hit on a rookie quarterback and put them in a decent position to be a competitive team, because I think they have a good coach who's won a Super Bowl and there's some talent in that team.
Yeah.
Should the Falcons, Justin, be on this list of teams we're talking about? No way. Right.
You know,
no way it's not Kirk Cousins, right?
There's no way it's not Kirk Cousins. But again, to take this back to a conversation we were having a few minutes ago, we know what the Falcons' ceiling will be with Kirk Cousins, right? Like, I know the jury's not completely out, but I can say with 90% confidence that the Falcons' ceiling with Kirk Cousins is 11 or 12 wins. And maybe you get a chance to play in the divisional round like that. You know what I mean? Like, that is their ceiling as far as I'm concerned. So yes, it's definitely going to be Kirk Cousins. It's really not much of a discussion, but I do think it's interesting because, again, you have a starting quarterback whose limits and potential are known, well known. And you got a guy like Michael Penix, who's an older quarterback. He's got a lot of potential. And I just wonder at what point you try to figure out just how much potential that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the Atlanta team has really been a textbook case. And what happens if you are like a headless machine? Like, you have everything but the quarterback, and you are just so limited in this league. So you plop Kirk Cousins, who's a veteran, he's ready-made. We know what he is. I think that's appealing to the Falcons. As opposed to going through the developmental process with Penix, who I love as a player. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Penix at some point this year, but I think they're going to roll with Cousins to start.
Yeah, I have a weird feeling that it's going to be – I think Penix is going to see his first start due to injury. That's what I think it's going to be. I just got a weird feeling, but you know, I just think at some point, whether it's this year or next year, Kirk Cousins is going to go down. It's tough at his age coming back from an Achilles injury. And you know what? I think the other thing that a lot of people forget, right, is when you're coming back from a major injury, it's not just like the Achilles that I'm worried about him re-injuring. Like, you take that much time off of physical activity and pushing your body to the limits, like, you lose a lot of strength and flexibility in other areas of your body, in your core, in, you know, all sorts of other places, right? So, like, I think that Kirk Cousins is a re-injury risk, not even just his Achilles, but just in general, I think he's a re-injury risk. And I think we'll see Michael Penix at some point make a start.
I absolutely agree with that. All right, let's talk a little bit, Justin. We're going to wrap it up in a sec. I don't know. We got a couple things I want to talk about. Let's take a look at the NFC West quickly.
Yeah.
And and just take it from there. Actually, let's save that for the next episode. We'll get into the division next episode. Let's talk about this. What is the one team that you think no one is talking about right now, but people should be talking about?
The one team that nobody is talking about, but I think they should be talking about. Well, you know, I think it's tough because I think there's a lot of good teams and good divisions out there. And there are a lot of unknowns. But a team that I really wonder about is it's the New Orleans Saints. I think that's a team where, you know, you still got Derek Carr, who, again, he's a talented loser, but he's shown you that he can go out there and take you to the playoffs. Like, you're in a weak division. You still have some good weapons. You got Chris Olave, you got Alvin Kamara. It's a decent offensive line. It's a decent defense. You know, you got guys like Marshawn Lattimore and whatnot on that. I think that's a very sneaky middle of the road team in a weak division that not many people are paying any attention to.
That's a good call. I mean, the division is definitely weak. The problem is, do they have a quarterback?
So part of the reason I'm saying this is because, yes, Derek Carr can get you 10, 11 wins. He could take you to the playoffs. Do I think he's a Super Bowl contender? No. But I really like the kid that they drafted behind him, Spencer Rattler. I think he's got potential. I think he didn't really get much hype, given all the other quarterbacks that went off the board earlier on. But I like Spencer Rattler. I'd be on the lookout for him. And I just think that team is pretty, I don't want to say well built, but I just think they're well rounded from top to bottom. I don't think they excel great in any particular area, but I think they're, like I said, they're fairly solid from top to bottom.
Well, the other thing too is, like, is the division really as bad as we think it is, right? Because Atlanta with Kirk Cousins is going to be a respectable team, if nothing else. And Tampa Bay made the divisional round and really gave Detroit a run for their money last year. And I think they have something there with Baker Mayfield. I know Carolina sucks. They're probably the worst team in the league. But I would say that the division is not as bad as we kind of view it to be.
Well, there's bad and then bad in comparison to the other divisions, right? Like, it to me, I think that's the worst division in football. Doesn't mean that it's an awful division, but I don't know. I mean, can you think of another division that you would say is overall worse than the NFC South right now?
How about the AFC South?
I don't know.
Jacksonville, Tennessee. Well, Houston's really good, right?
Houston's good. I like the Titans this year with, you know, if Anthony Richardson stays healthy, I love his potential. You got guys like Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor. They're deep at the skill positions. They got a good defense. Like,
I'm just saying the division isn't as bad. It may still be the worst division in the league. It's not as pathetic and hapless as we think it is. Like, right. You know, we would think of the NFC East as a strong division. They have Giants, who I think may be one of the worst teams in the league. And they have, you know, really, what else? You know, Tampa Bay went further in the playoffs and beat Philadelphia but last year. You know, Dallas is a wild card team, but Atlanta could be just as good as them. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, the Delta might not be that great.
No, for sure. I hear you. I think it'll be interesting. And you know what? The Saints might not be the best. The most attractive answer to that question. But again, I just look at them and I just say, you know what? I think that's going to be a team that if Derek Carr stays healthy and plays well, especially they brought in a new offense, you know, they're going to be running a much more up-tempo offense. But, you know, that offense was, I believe, like, you know, it was, they did like the least pre-snap motion in the league last year, right? Like, it was just a very stagnant, dull offense. And I think they're going to get a nice injection this year with their new OC coming over from, I believe it was San Francisco. And I think that's just going to, you know, they got a decent enough roster to surprise people.
And then I'll give you mine and then we're going to wrap it up. So I kind of spilled the tea already, but the Browns. People should be talking about the Cleveland Browns, not because they're going to be a great team this year. I don't know if they are, but it's because the Deshaun Watson experiment, I think, is coming to a head. Yep. And it's one of the most interesting transactions made in the NFL in the last few years. They put so much into acquiring this player. He has done nothing for them. They threw Baker Mayfield out the door like he was a piece of garbage. He is now in the divisional round of the playoffs last year with Tampa Bay, have the realistic chance of winning that division again. Deshaun Watson has done nothing for them, and they made the playoffs with Joe Flacco last year. They also brought in Jerry Jeudy, one of the best wide receivers available this year.
Yeah.
If Deshaun Watson cannot make it work, and I know it's a tough division, with this collection of talent around him, after 4 years in Cleveland, then we can officially call that transaction, that whole Baker Mayfield, Deshaun Watson swap that I think we both panned at the time, we can officially call that a giant fail. And I think that's why the Browns are interesting and people should be talking about them.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great call. That's one of the, that's a top five defense, arguably, in the NFL. Like, they're going to have playmakers, right, on both sides of the ball. And the biggest thing the Browns have going against them, to your point, is the fact that they're in arguably the toughest division in football, if not one of the toughest divisions in football. So
a very tough division. Yeah. A lot at stake, but a lot at stake for that franchise. I mean, Deshaun Watson got $250 million when he signed.
Right.
And what he done to even come close to justify? Literally nothing. I was always a Watson fan when he was in Houston, you know, in terms of his performance on the field, because he was a great passer.
Yep.
He doesn't look like the same player, whatever happened. But the psychological, physical, I don't know. All right, man, anything else? We're going to wrap it up. That's all the time we have for this episode of the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. You got anything you want to add, my man?
No, that's it.
All right, we didn't even get to the NFC West preview, so we can save that for next time. We got a lot of summer left still, a lot of time until we see an actual snap of football. So I think we'll be plenty of times to preview the divisions.
Yes. Yes. And when I know we're still probably not even close to it, but when does the Hall of Fame game? Is that August or is that in July?
It's traditionally been in late July.
Late July. I think
now preseason games, it might actually be in August here. I don't even know.
Okay.
I don't even know. That's like a tease.
But you know what? That's still all just a couple weeks away. You know what I mean? We're a couple weeks away from getting football back in the television. So, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, like that first Hall of Fame game, it's like trash. It is trash.
Yeah.
But you still watch it.
Of course.
And you're still, it feels great to have like real football on TV, even though it's total trash.
Yeah. For sure.
Awesome, brother. All right. Well, listen, thanks to anyone that watched. Listen, find us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube channel, Ultimate Patriots Podcast. The name change should be going through sometime soon. We are working on that for the Facebook page, working with Meta to make that official. It's become quite a production, but I'm hoping this week we'll get it done. I want to thank everyone that listened. Have a great week. Enjoy the summer and have a wonderful 4th. We'll catch you all next week.